Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Miller reporting. Former FBI Director James Comey has testified before the Senate Intelligence Committee during Thursday. VOA's Michael Bowman.
James Comey broke his silence 1 month after President Trump fired him as FBI director. Comey detailed a series of one-on-one meetings and telephone calls he says Trump orchestrated.
He was asking for something and I was refusing to give it.
Specifically, Comey said, the president wanted an end to the FBI's probe of former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. The exchanges led Comey to undertake something he had not done with previous presidents, write memos about his dealings with Trump.
I was honestly concerned that he might lie about the nature of our meeting, and so I thought it really important to document.
Michael Bowman, VOA News, the Capitol.
Mark Kasowitz, President Trump's personal lawyer, spoke to reporters following Comey's testimony, who he said made it clear that President Trump never sought to impede the investigation into attempted Russian interference during the 2016 election. The snap election, British Prime Minister Theresa May called Thursday, apparently may have dealt the ruling Conservative Party a major setback. When May called the election, her Conservative Party held a huge lead in public opinion polls, along with its slim majority in Parliament. That lead in polls shrank over the course of the campaign. Based on exit polls, May's Conservative Party is in danger of losing its majority in Parliament, prompting Labour Party leader Jeremy Corbyn to urge Prime Minister Theresa May to go. The exit polls predicting the Conservative Party losing majority have caused the pound to fluctuate. This is VOA. A U.S. military aircraft shot down an armed pro-Syrian government drone after it fired upon U.S.-led coalition members on patrol in southern Syria Thursday. It was the first time that pro-regime forces attempted to strike coalition forces in the area surrounding Al-Tanf, an army base where members of the coalition are training Syrians to fight Islamic State. Local counter-Islamic State fighters were patrolling the coalition with coalition troops about 60 kilometers east of Al-Tanf base when the drone launched a munition that failed to detonate. North Korea's Central News Agency says Pyongyang successfully tested a new ground-to-sea cruise rocket that is capable of striking enemy battleships staging a military attack. The agency said North Korea launched several land-to-sea missiles early Thursday under the supervision of leader Kim Jong-un. U.S. State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert said Thursday the resumption of talks with North Korea on the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula is made more difficult by Pyongyang's increasingly frequent missile tests.
That its provocative actions and by continuing with its missile tests is destabilizing not just for the region. It will cut off that country long-term globally, but it's destabilizing for the world as well.
The latest missile firing came just 1 day after South Korea suspended the deployment of the U.S. Terminal High Altitude Area Defense, or THAAD, missile system. Australian police investigating a siege earlier this week in which a gunman killed an apartment building receptionist and wounded three police officers have raided several homes in the city of Melbourne. Victoria State Premier Daniel Andrews told Sky News Television on Friday that the raids were conducted in connection with the terrible tragic events on Monday in Brighton. Police called Monday's siege a terrorist incident. Islamic State has claimed responsibility that it killed two captive Chinese nationals in southwest Pakistan. The Chinese language instructors were kidnapped at gunpoint 2 weeks ago from Quetta, the capital of violence-hit Balochistan province. A second Chinese woman accompanying them managed to escape abduction while the gunmen were trying to force them into a vehicle. At least 13 people are dead, including four attackers, after Boko Haram launched the deadliest attack in months on the northeast Nigeria city that is the birthplace of the extremist group. The attack came just hours before a visit by the country's acting president. Nigeria late last year declared Boko Haram had been crushed, but attacks continue, often with young women strapped to explosive devices for suicide attacks. In Washington, I'm Steve Miller.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, June 9th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. A Liberian presidential candidate says anyone who committed war crimes during the country's civil war must be prosecuted for those crimes.
Anybody that committed any war crimes should be prosecuted for it. That is my position, and nothing in this world would change this. If he feels threatened by that, well, I did say it over Voice of America.
Businessman Benoni Ure is leader of the opposition All-Liberian Party. The United States is criticized for supplying arms to nations that recruit child soldiers. Cameroon's military tribunal rejects a bill for Anglophone strike leaders. And the trial of Zambian opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema now goes to the country's Supreme Court.
We, the civil society, we feel that the political environment seems to be shrinking. The civic environment also seems to be shrinking because the state institutions are being used to persecute the opponent.
Louis Mwape is executive secretary of Zambia's Civil Society Consortium and will examine the challenges facing the Africa-wide high-level panel on migration. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. One of the candidates in Liberia's 2017 presidential election says anyone who committed war crimes during the country's civil war should be prosecuted for those crimes. Businessman Benoni Ure is the leader of the opposition All-Liberian Party, and he once served as head of the country's Bureau of Maritime Affairs during the Charles Taylor presidency. He says if Taylor was found guilty for war crimes, then anybody who allegedly committed war crimes must also be brought to justice. This comes after Senator Prince White Johnson accused Ure of involvement with allegations that he, Johnson, is being investigated for possible war crimes for allegedly killing an American woman during the Civil War. Johnson said Ure colluded with an American, Allen White, to intimidate Johnson to support Ure's candidacy because, according to Johnson, America wants Ure to be the next president of Liberia. Ure says although he's met with Mr. White, they never discussed Prince Johnson and war crimes.
To be honest with you, Allen and I have never sat and discussed anything of this nature. I'm way above this matter, and I don't want to go into any confrontation with this man. But it's obvious that something is wrong. Look, my position remains the same. Anybody that committed any war crimes should be prosecuted for it. That is my position, and nothing in this world would change it. If he feels threatened by that, well, I did say it over Voice of America.
So, Mr. Ure, are you aware of any war crimes investigators in Liberia who might be looking into allegations of war crimes that might probably have been committed by some people in Liberia?
I'm busy involved with my campaign. That doesn't really concern me. It will only concern those that might be implicated in it. But I read about it in the dailies. I think I read about it in Front Page Africa. I read about it in Hot Pepper. But Hot Pepper has been consistent in her reporting on this war crime situation in Liberia. And that daily continues to report that there are Americans, FBI agents that are investigating some personalities in Liberia for crimes they might have committed during the war. So basically, we heard about it from the local daily.
So let me ask you, have you met with Mr. Allen White before? Have you met with him recently or in the immediate past?
Yes, during his period of investigating, I think President Taylor, I met him. And of course, I've met him in a couple of months ago, too. But in recent times, no, I've not met Allen White.
Mr. Ure, I'm kind of wondering, why do you think Senator Prince Johnson singled you out?
Basically, we were negotiating with Prince Johnson's party, and then he pulled out, for reasons best known to him. But we believe he was compromised, but it doesn't bother us. To be honest with you, James Barty, and for the rest of the Liberians around, the world, we were happy that it happened.
So what do you mean he was compromised, or you believed he was compromised?
We believe he was compromised.
I'm asking, what do you mean by that?
Basically, James, there were really two political parties that stood out against the government. Over the last year or two, we have become the voice of the opposition because we've been sounding out against the injustice in this society. We've been sounding out for the rights of our people, you know, and we've been challenging the government where we felt they have gone wrong. Also, where they have done right, we have praised them and we have congratulated the president. But where we felt they have fallen short of our expectation as a people, you know, we have criticized that.
Mr. Urie, it's always very much appreciated talking to you.
Thank you so much, James Wilkie.
Businessman Benoni Urie is the leader and presidential candidate of the opposition All Liberian Party. He spoke with me from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. A military tribunal in Cameroon has denied bail to two civil society leaders accused of directing violent unrest in the northwest and the southwest regions in December. They are among the more than two dozen people still detained in connection with the ongoing strike in Cameroon's two English-speaking regions. Calls for their release continue to drive unrest and remain the key roadblock to dialogue as the strike enters its seventh month. Moki Edwin Kizeka reports for VOA from the courthouse in Yaoundé.
It was quiet at the Mbingo Baptist Hospital in northwestern Cameroon, despite the hundreds of people who have come out to sympathize with Chatel Anyere. The 17-year-old was brutally attacked last Monday. She was on her way to school with two of her peers when the machete-wielding assailants pounced. The attackers have not been identified. The surgeon, Jim Brown, had good news.
The injuries required some washing out the wounds. There was some muscle and some tendons which had to be repaired, and there were some fractures of bones that had to be set. But she's doing fine. She's very stable.
It is believed Anyere was targeted because she was defying calls to boycott classes as part of the ongoing strike in Cameroon's two English-speaking regions. Most schools remain shut in those areas. The government says strikers have resorted to violence to press for the unconditional release of people detained over the strike. VOA could not reach strike leaders for comment as many are detained or in hiding. Authorities have condemned what they say have been a series of arson attacks on government buildings and markets in the English-speaking areas this year. A crowd assembled here at Nkwen in the northwestern capital of Bamenda last Monday after a four-story hotel went up in flames.
We had to call the fire brigades, and thank God they came on time. We don't know as of now, we don't know any cause that might have caused the fire to explode.
Hotel staff said they suspect the act was carried out because the business did not respect calls for citywide shutdown days to protest the continued detention of the strike leaders. An investigation into the fire is underway. Back in Yaoundé, 27 people arrested over the strike appeared again Wednesday before a military tribunal. Chief Judge Colonel Abega Mezo Ekoeko presided. On May 30, the judge had said the two detained leaders, Barrister Felix Nkongo Agbobala and Fontemneba, would be granted what the judge called controlled freedom, but no bail was granted Wednesday. The prosecution argued that people facing terrorism-related charges, punishable by a possible death sentence, cannot be granted conditional release. Following the proceedings, the judge took no questions from the media. Soldiers prevented the defense counsel from granting interviews at the court premises. Strikers have refused to reopen dialogue with the government until the detainees are freed. The strike began in November with Anglophone teachers and lawyers in the northwest and the southwest. They said English-speaking citizens are marginalized in the bilingual country, and they demanded reforms. But secessionist groups soon joined the movement, and their calls for full independence for the English-speaking zones derailed dialogue and helped spur a government crackdown. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Bamenda, Northwestern Cameroon.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butt in Washington. Today is Friday, June 9th. Daybreak Africa time is now 15 and a half minutes past the hour. The trial of Zambian opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema will now proceed to the country's high court. Hichilema, leader of the opposition United Party for National Development, the UPND, and five others, face treason charges for allegedly endangering Zambian President Edgar Lungu's life in April when his motorcade failed to give way to the presidential motorcade. UPND supporters are demanding his immediate and unconditional release because they say the charges are politically motivated. Luis Mwape is the executive secretary of Zambia's Civil Society Consortium. He tells viewers Peter Clotty that civil society groups and a cross-section of Zambians feel that the government is using state institutions to prosecute opponents.
You maybe also recall the fact that this is a charge that some of the cases which were accompanied to the same count, one was dropped, the other one was acquitted. So what has remained now is the same case of treason, which has a lot of questions by majority Zambians, especially political actors who are calling upon President Lungu and his government never to continue persecuting political actors such as Hakainde Hichilema.
Louise, are you saying that some Zambians are seeing this trial or these charges of treason against Hakainde Hichilema as persecution and not necessarily taking him through the legal, transparent process?
Exactly, because if you look at the process that the case gone through, at first it was a treason charge, but it had no overt. And whilst it was in court, that is when they had to revise the case and the charge itself to put the reason why he was arrested and charged with treason, which they came up with an overt. So it is the same overt which has been used and the same committal certificate which has been used, apparently which was signed by one of the prosecutors from the DPP's office.
Some critics of the government are saying that this is the use of state institutions by the Patriotic Front government to intimidate and harass opponents such as Hakainde Hichilema. What are you hearing on the ground?
Well, there is an assertion by the political actors and we, the civil society, we feel that the political environment seems to be shrinking. The civic environment also seems to be shrinking because the state institutions are being used to persecute the opponents and those that are also taking part in the developing democracy processes. I think it is also unfortunate that we have reached this far as a country because we are a country that has been leading in terms of developing the democracy in the SADC region. You may be aware that in the past we have some presidents within SADC and also in Africa who have never been stepped down since they were elected, since independence. So I think the issue of freeing the democratic space is important and that we need to, together with the Patriotic Front and other opposition political leaders, to ensure that democracy is one thing that we all uphold and we all promote, because once we lose the democracy that we fought 25 years ago, it will be very difficult to reclaim and create another dictator.
Luis Mwape is the executive secretary of Zambia's Civil Society Consortium. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Lusaka. A United Nations watchdog committee says the United States is in violation of treaty obligations aimed at protecting children in armed conflict and preventing the sale and trafficking of children. The Committee on the Rights of the Child, which monitors implementation of the Convention on the Rights of the Child, has just completed a three-week examination of the United States and seven other countries. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The United States is the only country in the world that is not party to the Convention on the Rights of the Child, but it has ratified two optional protocols to the Convention on the Involvement of Children in Armed Conflict and the Sale of Children, Child Prostitution, and Child Pornography. Both protocols were reviewed at this session. Under the Protocol on Children in Armed Conflict, the committee expressed concern about the deaths of children killed by U.S. airstrikes in countries such as Yemen, Syria, and Afghanistan. Human rights expert Benyam Dawid Mizmor says the committee is troubled by full or partial presidential waivers that enable the U.S. to provide military training and assistance to armed forces in countries where the recruitment and use of children as soldiers is practiced. He tells VOA the U.S. argues it needs to provide military aid to such countries as Yemen, Afghanistan, and South Sudan to professionalize their armed forces.
The conflict that is going on in South Sudan has a child as its face. It's been extremely devastating for children. Now, to talk about partial or full waiver for the government of South Sudan to be able to have access to military equipment and commercial sale access from the government of the United States of America, we don't believe that will actually help to professionalize the armed forces. We don't believe that it will help in the implementation of the optional protocol in South Sudan.
The Committee of Experts commends the United States for the progress being made in the fight against the trafficking and exploitation of children. But it says the U.S. falls short in preventing abuse in areas such as the sale of children for work purposes, organ trafficking, adoption, or the use of children in pornography. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The Africa-wide high-level panel on migration was launched this week in Monrovia. The panel will spend much of its efforts focusing on migration within Africa, which makes up a large percentage of movements than those leaving Africa for Europe. Aida Opoku-Mesa, director of the high-level panel on migration, spoke to Ricky Shryak about some of the challenges and plans for the panel.
There's a lot of focus on migration outside of Africa. But the other flip side of this is the fact that there's actually more migration that takes place within Africa than outside of Africa. You have more people moving within the continent than leaving the continent. Quite frankly, the percentage of Africans that leave this continent is minuscule. It's well below 10% of the population of Africa that leaves. The real issues are the internal migration. By internal, I mean internal migration within Africa. And these have come about as a result of maybe two or three factors. The first factor is as a result of displaced people where you have conflict. A good example is recently in Uganda. You had Uganda took in about 800,000 South Sudanese as a result of conflict. Now, I've never heard of any European country taking 800,000 Africans. So this is just the contrast.
What's the plan of action? What will the panel be doing to address these issues?
The idea is that we want to bring a focus, the panel wants to bring a focus on the kind of narrative that looks at migration from an African-centric perspective. In West Africa, perhaps that's where the international movement outside of Africa happens, to Europe. Each and every sub-region of Africa have different factors that influence the migration that's taking place within these regions. And we need to understand that. The other aspect also is that the panel is keen to show that migration is not only a negative thing, it's a positive thing, and that migrants can bring all kinds of advantages into societies.
Migrants, for the most part, are believed to be a vulnerable group, women in particular. Can you comment on that?
You have women, clearly, that from West Africa that go into Europe to seek employment opportunities. And sometimes they end up doing all kinds of things to get by. You have a phenomenon in Africa where there is a racket where young girls are sold, literally carted off to Middle East to be doing domestic work. And you have agents who go around the villages collecting these young girls and sending them off to the Middle East to do that kind of work.
That was Aida Opoku Mesa, director of the High-Level Panel on Migration. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Liberia's capital, Monrovia. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Nigeria. Good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good morning to you, James. We begin with athletics, where Olympic silver medalist Hellen Obiri beat reigning world 1,500 meters champion Genzebe Dibaba to win the 5,000 meters race at the Rome Diamond League in a national record time of 14 minutes, 18.37 seconds, the fastest time in the world this year. On the way to setting the world lead, Obiri took almost 4 seconds off her personal best time over the distance, a huge morale booster as she prepares for the national trials ahead of the IWA World Athletics Championships in London come August. In the men's 3,000 meters steeplechase, Kenyan Olympic champion Conseslus Kipruto held off a late challenge from Moroccan Sofiane El Bakkali to win his first race of the season, crossing the line in a world lead time of 8 minutes 4.63 seconds. El Bakkali came home second in a personal best time of 8 minutes 5.17 seconds, while Jairus Birea narrowly peeped world junior champion Amos Kiriu to third. Kiriu had given Consultals a chase up to the final bend when he drained off. In judo news, a Swiss judo trainer and expert, Francois Weil, is currently in Liberia on a 5-day visit to train Liberian judo athletes. Weil, who is a fifth Dan in judo, arrived in the country based on the invitation of the Vice President of Liberia, Joseph Boakai Sr., who visited Switzerland a few months ago and made the arrangement with the President of the Swiss National Judo Federation, Christian Vuessa. At the first day of training at the Samuel Doe Sports Complex, Francois Weil said he is in Liberia on the request of the Vice President to distribute medical consignment and train local judo athletes. And on to football news. It's a big weekend in Africa, as a total of 48 matches have been lined up to be played across various venues in Africa this weekend in the 2019 African Cup of Nations qualifying round for Cameroon. In Nigeria, the match between the Bafana Bafana of South Africa and the Super Eagles of Nigeria at the Oyo International Stadium on Saturday has been rated as one of the top clash of the tournament qualifier this year. Bafana Bafana coach Stuart Baxter believes that in football, nothing is impossible, especially when the record between Nigeria and South Africa skewed in the favor of Nigeria.
I don't think you should be intimidated by anybody. There are too many examples in football of David beating Goliath, so this is not a David and Goliath, but Nigeria is home. They're a very strong nation, and obviously they'll start as favourites, but intimidated, no.
And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a very good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And that's it for this Friday, June 9th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson Omale, along with our engineers, I'm James Butte, wishing you a very good weekend.
Music time in Africa. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell. Who's got the best Pan-African music show? The one that's 60 minutes commercial free? You know it's me. This week on Music Time in Africa, I've got a magical mix of old classics, not so old classics, and fresh new bangers too.
Les dogmatiques, les pragmatiques.
You'll also meet Kenyan artist Tetushani, the Tuareg Desert rock band Terracot, and newcomer from Rwanda, Stanza Muvandimwe. The magic is in the mix, so don't miss it. Stay cool and stay current right here on Music Time in Africa. This Sunday and the following Saturday at 15 and 2000 UTC.